Two small town girls living in a big city, chasing even bigger dreams. Meet your hosts, Kylie Benami and Sophie Longford. These two high fashion models have discovered that life outside of their hometowns isn't so simple. Talking all things fashion, wellness, fitness, and all of the messy things in between. Here we go. Welcome to The Not So Simple Life.
I love it.
Hi everyone, we have an extremely knowledgeable guest joining us in today's episode. Dr. Jolene Brighton is a prominent leader in women's medicine and is coming on to chat about the importance of hormones.
Dr. Brighton empowers women worldwide to take control of their overall health and hormones. She is a trailblazer in her studies on the effects of hormonal birth control and has been featured in Forbes, Cosmopolitan, New York Post, and many more. Let's get into it.
It is a good day today, guys, because I am finally 3 weeks post-vaccine and I'm feeling a little bit more safe in this wacky new world. I can now slowly and safely start socializing a little bit more and going back to work. So I'm feeling optimistic.
Which vaccine did you get?
So I got the AstraZeneca one and I had a pretty bad reaction to it. I had like the worst flu that night and was like shaking and had the worst body aches, but it only lasted for like 9 hours and I woke up feeling fine. So it's worth it, but just expect to have some downtime because your immune system is going to be like, bam.
Well, Sophie got hers in Dubai, so I'm still here in New York. And when people ask me if I've gotten it yet, I always say I am like totally just general population here. I am like young and healthy. I'm definitely going to be one of the last ones to get the vaccine. And I'm not into skipping the line because I know so many people need this vaccine. And why would I take someone else's chance here in the States when I'm good for now, you know? You're in Dubai, like it's very available there. Here in the States, yeah. Like we're almost there where it's very available, but
no, agreed.
We're still a little bit limited, but they say by May, all of us can take it. So in the meantime, I'm just sitting pretty, trusting my immune system.
Yeah. It got offered to me, so I was like, why not? I definitely didn't want to pass the opportunity because who knows when I'm going to get the opportunity again. But yeah, I mean, if you get the opportunity to take it, definitely do it because you need to stay protected and you have no idea what this virus is going to do to you if you catch it. Whether you're young, fit, healthy, have no underlying health conditions, some people still really react badly to it. So it's a scary thing. But are you still like kind of anti getting it, even if you do get offered it?
I think by the time I get it, enough people will have it and we'll all see that everything is going okay. I'm still not like a massive vaccination fan, but this is important and our whole world is at stake. So I think the more vaccinations, the better. That's where I'm currently sitting at. So I'm just waiting my turn patiently. I'm just waiting to see if your lungs shrivel up and if not, then I'll get mine.
Yeah. Wait to see if I grow an extra eye and then you'll take it.
Right, exactly. But on a lighter note, I am getting my puppy finally April 15th. I'm bringing home a little brindle baby girl bulldog.
Swear
this has been like the longest 4 months of my life waiting for this puppy. Dog breeders are so weird and they make things so complicated. All I want is my puppy, but it's like, it's been a thing. He's like putting me through the ringer for this dog. I'm like, I'm sorry for giving you my business and for paying a lot of money for this puppy, but
I'm sharing your excitement here right now. Waiting for a new puppy is like probably one of the most exciting things you could possibly do. I'm excited for you.
And we have some excitement going on here because Dr. Jolene Brighton, who's joining us today, she is pregnant and has just started her maternity leave. So we are so lucky that she's coming on the show today to chat with us because she has a baby on the way and coming soon and took the time to do this interview. So I'm excited for everybody to hear about how knowledgeable she is in terms of birth control and just hormone health in general. This is going to be a great episode, you guys.
I've been wanting to get a hormone specialist on here for so long. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get Jolene on here and get on into it.
Hi, Jolene. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you both.
We're so excited to have you here. So do you want to start off by just introducing yourself and telling us a bit about how you came into your specialty in women's medicine and hormone health?
Yeah, so it was a long road, I think, like many of us. And I was going to be a dentist. That was my goal initially, yes. But a dog bite to my dominant hand changed everything. But at the time, I was getting my degree in nutrition science. So I was concurrently studying clinical nutrition and what would be termed nutritional biochemistry. So I then went into my master's. I was going to get my master's in nutrition and then go into my PhD and realized that I really wanted to help people one-on-one. And I came across naturopathic medicine, which made so much sense to me because I had this pretty extensive science background, and yet I really wanted to have something that focused on the philosophy of looking at why. Why does the body behave in the way it does? Rather than having this perspective that if your body has a symptom, it is broken, it must, you know, we must use a pharmaceutical or surgery or something else to basically make your body behave. Really asking the question of why is it doing this and how do we work with diet and lifestyle therapies? And back then, functional medicine was not mainstream at all. I'd never even heard of it. You know, it is something that people ask me, would you have gone a different route? I'm like, perhaps I would have gone a different route, but this really was something that called to me. And it was, you know, my goal to actually focus on gut health until I had the epiphany that so much of women's medicine was being done to them, not with them, sometimes not even for them. I was taught a very different way. So in my women's health clinical rotations, we were taught about consent during the gyne exam. We were taught about, you know, how to ask a woman basically what her goals were rather than her telling us, you know, what is called chief complaints in medicine, and then us coming in with our own agenda and saying, well, you know, if this is what's going on, then this is what you will do. And, you know, I reflected a lot on my experience in women's health, which is, you know, a lot of gynecologists basically using my lack of knowledge against me to get me to do particular treatments. And that's really what inspired me to go into women's health, is that I wanted to shift the paradigm. I wanted to be a different kind of provider for them. And I, you know, if you follow me on Instagram or TikTok, people can't see them, I'm wearing, TikTok sent me a hat. You make so many videos and they send you a hat apparently. But, you know, so much of my life's work is really focused on filling in the gap and giving you all the information you should have been given before you ever got your period, because that's so much I see in women who are in their 30s and 40s, especially who come into my office. There are things that they're struggling with that started it as their teens or their 20s that they really could have handled at home all on their own had they just understood their body and understood how to care for their body.
Absolutely. Well, I know that one topic that so many of us are often misinformed on is birth control. So I want to get into what you think are the most harmful kinds of birth controls and what are the negative side effects that so many of us may be experiencing or not know we're experiencing from being on birth control.
Mm-hmm. No, this is definitely one that I did the pill for 10 years. First generation college student from a very large family. Very grateful for having access to that. But yet, I didn't even understand how it works the entire time I was on it. And once I did learn how it worked, I decided to go off of it because it made no sense. I was in medical school learning about how to, you know, help a woman get pregnant and realizing, wait, I only ovulate one day out of the month and that's it. I have this 24-hour window and yet I suppress my hormones every single day. So if anyone's listening to this and they feel like you didn't get all the information, a lot of us, I mean, I became a doctor. I didn't have all the information, which means I didn't really make an informed decision. I didn't get my informed consent in starting birth control. And I think it's important that we can look at birth control and all the great things it has done for us. I mean, being in control of your reproductive health, amazing. Not having to have a period, you know, if you're gonna get married, amazing. Being able to have clear skin, you know, and use this drug in all the ways that we use it. I mean, there's a lot of benefits, and yet with every form of birth control, there is a risk as well. And that's what we often don't hear about, because there's this kind of old school way of thinking that, like, to be a feminist means that you don't question about birth control. You just accept it. You push it. You know, you say, like, this is the best thing for all of us. Don't question it. And I really don't think that that is true feminism from my perspective. Now, this is a belief, and I will just say that. In that, you know, what I wrote in Beyond the Pill is I believe that, you know, really what feminism is like understanding all of your options and choosing what's right for you and being given the information so you choose what is best for you and recognizing that what is best for you is not best for her. So while you might say the pill's the best thing I ever did, it may not be the best thing for her. So when this other woman says it ruined my life, it ruined my relationship, it tanked my mood, I had yeast infections, all of these issues, that we respect that. And we respect that everybody has a different experience. So when we talk about the most dangerous birth control, thankfully at this point, these have been removed from the market. So Esure is no longer, you know, something that's being used and recommended. It was a coil that went into your fallopian tube and unfortunately became shrapnel in a lot of women's pelvis. So it just, you know, basically I've seen some imaging and it looks like it exploded in there and you've got metal everywhere.
Nice.
Yeah, right? It took a long time too. This is the thing where I think women get so frustrated and why they reject birth control, you know, altogether or these medical interventions is because women were reporting this, and it was ignored. It was ignored by their providers. It was ignored by the FDA until there were enough cases, it could no longer be ignored. And we see that with so much of women's medicine. And I will say, like, you know, there were early IUDs that did cause infertility. None of us have even seen those in our lifetime, but that's where a lot of the birth control will cause infertility came from. You'll hear a provider say, no, that never happened, it's impossible. We still need a lot of long-term data to like really understand this well, and I'm always open to changing my mind. But when we understand that like once upon a time there was this IUD and it did cause problems, that like we can, instead of dismissing it, we can respect like where these fears are coming from. So what's available on the market now though? So we've got the pill, which is the very first to step on the scene, which is why we talk about it the most. It's also why it's used the most, but it's also why it's confusing when it doesn't have long-term data. So why is it that we put a gal on it at 14 and we don't know what happens when she stays on it until she's 44 or 54? Like, we have no idea what long-term menstrual suppression does. Now we have people that are, you know, just skipping their period altogether. It's important to understand it's because it's not really a period when you're on the pill. Like if you don't ovulate, there's no point in getting a period. But we still just don't have, there's a lot of data that we don't have. So, you know, I guess in answering this, I can tell you about the side effects we know about, but I think it's also just important to understand there's a whole lot we don't know about.
Sure.
Well, what are some of the most common side effects of being on something like the pill?
Mm-hmm. Well, we first have to recognize that these hormones, just like your natural hormones, can impact every single system in your body. So with the pill specifically, this is the only contraceptive we really have data on a laundry list of nutrient depletions that can happen. So while you're on it, nutrient depletions of like magnesium, zinc, selenium, so some key minerals. We can also see B vitamins, so like B6, B2, B12, folate. I think we all know folate because if you get pregnant, you want to make sure you have folate so you don't have spinal tube defects. Spoiler, the pill is only about 91% effective with our typical use, not the perfect use. So it's important to understand that if you're on birth control and you are sexually active, that you should be on a multivitamin or prenatal that provides you folate and some of these nutrients. Often I'll hear people say, well, if you just eat a standard diet, you'll be fine. Except the standard American diet is actually devoid of nutrients. So you won't 100%. Just be fine. That's why in my book, I focus so much on nutrition. I mean, my background where I started this was in nutrition. And that's very much the foundation, the way that you feed your body and support your body. So we've got the nutrient depletions that can happen. For some people, they're going to be fine because they do eat in a certain way and they are taking a multivitamin or prenatal. For other people, we will see signs of suboptimal nutrition. I'll hear doctors say like, well, I never see nutrient deficiencies. Like you don't see anyone with scurvy. I always laugh. I'm like, well, we're not pirates. Like we're not going to see people with scurvy. Like most doctors are not trained in nutrition. So they don't understand that there are suboptimal levels of nutrients. So suboptimal levels of vitamin D that can affect your immune system and your immune health. But what we're not going to see is like rickets. So we're not going to see vitamin D deficiency in at least developed nations. We're not going to see these kinds of things. So the other common things that we see with birth control is we can see mood changes. So at this point, we have no studies that can actually definitively say that birth control causes depression. If you know you've ever been on birth control, like I had a round of pills that they ended up switching me off of because I was so depressed and I like couldn't even function. I lost a job. Like I just could not function. I was so depressed. And at the time, it was dismissed. It's currently still just really dismissed. And yet, we have more and more studies coming out showing it's just not the pill. We can also see this with the progestin IUDs. We can see it with the patch, the NuvaRing, the Depo shot, that some women have adverse mood outcomes. So they can be depressed, they can have anxiety. Teens are at highest risk of suicidal ideation, so thoughts about taking their own life. And these are things that we like to stigmatize mental health in society as it is. We like to shame people. We like to make it so that people don't feel comfortable talking about it. Then we put them on a medication that then they have side effects. And then we tell them, like, it's just in your head. It's not the medication. It must be you. Mm-hmm. And so what I find a lot that I hear from my patients and I hear from women online is they don't even go to their doctor to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it because they don't want to be told they're crazy. It's really problematic in that way.
They make people feel like there's no way that's related. Why would a birth control pill have anything to do with your mental health?
Right. And it's something that's interesting because if you talk with researchers, so I have a friend, Dr. Sarah Hill, who wrote This Is Your Brain on Birth Control. She's a researcher. This is her work. She's like, yes, there's absolutely a connection. And we expect that, like, she's like, for some reason, clinicians believe that you give a pill and if they're, you know, any pill really, but, you know, if we're talking about the pill, then if it's, you know, that everybody should have the same experience. And yet there's always these outliers. And she's like, it's so confusing to me. And the thing she points out is that most clinicians are just not reading the research. And until it gets presented to them in a way that they'll actually listen, they'll continue to dismiss their patients. And it's really disheartening because I believe very much that you don't have to wait till you read that study to believe that this patient is having this experience. Like, believe her. It's not that hard to believe someone. And maybe it's not the pill. Maybe it's not that. But you can still believe that there's a correlation here. You can listen and you can approach it in a way so that she trusts you and you build that trust. So a few of the other side effects that we can see with a pill: low libido. You can see this with, you know, all birth control, but the pill especially, tanking your libido, causing pain with intercourse. We can see increased risk of yeast infections. There can be gut issues that come up for some women as well. That seems to be specific with the pill because when you take it, you're supposed to absorb it through your small intestine, but some of it makes its way to your large intestine, which is where your microbiome lives. So that's the main hub for all of your gut bacteria. And as it turns out, that those synthetic hormones aren't so good for them. And so there's been studies showing that it's comparable to antibiotics in terms of how it can affect your microbiome. So this is something like we have to give pause on as well of like, well, what effect could this be having? The microbiome affects everything.
Of course. So obviously, with all of these side effects comes a lot of inflammation in the body, which could in turn be coming from the pill. Now, how long can it take to fix this? This may be different for everybody, I'm sure, but in general, from your studies, how long would you say it takes to fix this if somebody decides to come off of the pill?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you brought up the inflammation piece because that ties into the microbiome, because your gut is where your immune system primarily lives. And so we do know with the microbiome itself, I mean, we can see shifts in the microbiome within 24 hours of changing our diet. So there's a lot of hope in that way. However, it's also important to recognize that we know if we look at antibiotics, and that can impact your microbiome for 2 to 3 years. So does that mean like, okay, well, if it's 2 to 3 years, does that mean it's hopeless? No. In most of those studies, we are looking at like, what if somebody does nothing? But what if you do something about it? What if you start increasing your fiber? You get fiber diversity coming in. What if you start to take in probiotics? You're taking in the prebiotics. So that's what we're talking about with the fiber. So we want to feed those critters that are in there. And then we're taking in probiotics as well. So we're eating things like sauerkraut and kimchi that are fermented foods. Maybe you're supplementing with a probiotic. You know, can we shift things faster? And in my clinical experience, we can. And we have to remove the obstacle here, which is, you know, the pill. So if you are going to come off the pill and you're wanting to heal your body, I, you know, typically say a good metric to look at is for as long as you were on it in years. So let's say 10 years, you really want to focus on that in months to really, you know, kind of rehab your body, so to speak. So giving yourself a good 10 months to really support your body. And that doesn't mean, you know, when I say that, I don't want people to think like, oh my gosh, is this like going to be some kind of intensive? No, it's really paying attention to your body. I think that, you know, the pandemic has actually been a gift in that way, that we've all had to slow down and pause, get uncomfortable sometimes in being home alone with ourselves, but also that we can tune in and really tune into our body. And so focusing on, you know, how do foods make you feel? Like, I really am not a fan of this like good food, bad food kind of thing that goes around. It's more of like, does this food work for you? And really being indifferent about it. Like, it's just food. So like, I say that, but like, I'm a Latina and we like love food and our food is very important culturally. Yet at the same time, it's like, okay, maybe corn doesn't work for you. Okay, fine. Like, it doesn't work for you. It's not bad. It might work for you again in the future. But for right now, we're just going to like skip that, focus on something else. And so paying attention to how you feel with food, paying attention to your circadian rhythm. So how well you're sleeping. You cannot get your hormones in check and you cannot dampen inflammation if you are not sleeping. And so here's something really important to understand about sleep, because I feel like, especially like the younger you are, maybe the more you'll like eye roll about sleep. I know that like, I think I went through my 20s thinking like sleep was so negotiable and I was amazing because sometimes I could go on 3 hours of sleep. You know, I was on the pill. So if I hadn't been on the pill, I probably would have known. My body would have been like, you are so messing up right now. Yeah. But with sleep, you guys are laughing. We're all kind of having a laugh right now about it, because as I am now 7.5 months pregnant and it's baby number two and I'm just dreading the lack of sleep. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I wish my teenage self would have slept more. I wish my 20-something
year old. You wish you got those hours when you could.
Yeah, totally. So let's talk about that sleep piece though, because, you know, I think we take it for granted because it's just something that we do like every day. And so with sleep, it's a stressor if you're not sleeping. Any environmental stressor will signal to your body that the environment's not safe. And if you were born with ovaries, then you're very, very sensitive to these environmental stressors. So if you're coming off of birth control or not, you're just wanting to have awesome hormones, sleep is so crucial for several reasons. And a big one is because it helps with the optimization of cortisol and melatonin. So cortisol is an adrenal hormone. This dampens your inflammation. So if you are taking a medication that's inflammatory, you're doing things that are inflammatory, your adrenal glands are going to produce more cortisol because too much inflammation is a bad thing. A little bit, not so bad. There's a time and a place for it. But, you know, aside from that, cortisol is also what helps you wake up in the morning. So you wake up in the morning, your cortisol is up and your melatonin is degrading. It's coming down. Your cortisol will take you throughout the day, providing you with energy. In the evening, it should come down and your melatonin should rise. And so melatonin is great for sleep. Yes, this we know. By the way, you need to avoid your screens at night some blue light blocking glasses, because the way that melatonin gets broken down in the morning is when light passes through your eyes and then it triggers the pineal gland to say, we don't need melatonin, break it down. You can simulate that at night by looking at your phone, by being on your laptop, by watching TV. You can totally, you know, get to have your TV and, you know, have your Netflix and hormones too by wearing some like blue light blocking glasses, and those can really help. Now, melatonin is a potent antioxidant. If we've got inflammation, we've got free radicals, and you're going to make free radicals anyways. Melatonin is produced in tissues that are really, so not just the pineal gland, but tissues that are really highly concentrated in mitochondria. Your ovaries are very highly concentrated in mitochondria. So you are going, just by producing hormones, you're going to make free radicals. Free radicals destroy cells. So, but this is just the way it is. And then you have antioxidants that come in and that balances things out. And melatonin is one of the most potent antioxidants. And so by getting quality sleep, not just like getting in the bed for 8 hours, but actually having a bit of a bedtime routine, having that quality sleep, you can protect your ovaries with melatonin and thereby make better hormones altogether and have less fatigue the next day.
Wow. So melatonin is that important?
Super important. So neglected.
When coming off of the contraceptive pill, what are some ways that we can optimize our hormone health and our fertility?
So the sleep is a big one, right? Because if you have the melatonin protecting your ovaries, in fact, if you are struggling with infertility, we often bring melatonin in as a supplement as part of that fertility protocol.
Do you have a favorite melatonin supplement?
We have a formula called Sweet Dreams. That is what I personally take. And that's because it's not only just melatonin, but it's formulated with herbs and nutrients that are going to promote deep, restful sleep. So with melatonin, that helps you fall asleep, but it won't help you stay asleep. And so that's why we've combined that in the formula to help you stay asleep. Women who have hormonal issues often have problems staying asleep, especially before their period.
That's my problem with melatonin, actually. It always initiates me sleeping, and then I'll wake up 3 hours later every time when I have to take more. Mm-hmm. And so if I just mix it with valerian root, then it always works a lot better.
Yeah, so right before your period, your progesterone levels may be declining, and progesterone stimulates GABA in the brain. And GABA is the neurotransmitter that will help you stay asleep throughout the night. And so valerian can be beneficial. Passion flower is one. It's because not everybody does well with valerian, and it can make you really groggy the next morning too.
It does.
Yeah. Whereas passion flower is like a lot more gentle. You can drink it in a tea. You can have it as a tincture. We put it in our formulas. I'm a big fan of passion flower just because when you look at that flower, this is this is that purple flower. You just feel like kind of euphoric and calm. Just, it's so beautiful. Mm. And you just look at it and you're just like, ah, such a nice feeling.
We love that.
So yeah, I love that as well. So, you know, that is something that can help so that you stay asleep through the night. But it is that low progesterone that can make it so that you have night waking. Very, very common in perimenopause. Often estrogen gets the blame for everything in perimenopause that goes wrong, like the hot flashes and the night sweats and the night waking. And yes, there's estrogen is causing issues, but you know, and I discuss this in my book, and I have a whole quiz so you can decode and figure out which hormone is your issue. Spoiler, there's usually a couple that are working together.
Sure.
But it's that unopposed estrogen, not ovulate. So you have to ovulate to make your own progesterone. That's why the entire time you're on the pill, you don't have progesterone. You have synthetic progestin that's coming in, but it's that ovulation, and then what follows is the corpus luteum secreting progesterone that helps you feel more calm in your body. If you don't have that, you know, what we see in perimenopause, maybe you're not ovulating, or you've come off the pill, you haven't started ovulating yet, or the corpus luteum isn't just doing its job well enough, we will see you're more anxious, you are having night waking, you're having trouble falling asleep. It always tends to be that like the minute your head hits the pillow is when your mind is like, let's talk about everything we messed up today. Like, let's just like go through like how bad of a mess up we are in life. And like something that you're like, yes, part of that is behavioral, but yes, part of that is your hormones. You know, one thing to consider, like if you're looking at a supplement and you're thinking, well, I want to take melatonin, you know, for my fertility, but I'm not staying asleep through the night, is we want to back up and we want to say, how can we optimize ovulation? How can we optimize the corpus luteum? So after you ovulate, there's a temporary endocrine structure left in your ovary called the corpus luteum that produces progesterone. Vitamin C and vitamin B6 can help it do its job better. So you could start eating some bell peppers. You could get yourself some leafy greens coming in, looking at, you know, if you're gonna eat grains, maybe getting some whole grains coming in. So B6 tends to be higher in grains, which is where it gets tricky because these days a lot of people don't eat a lot of grains. So you may need to supplement. And I just say that because we've got like paleo diet, keto diet, like there's all of these different diets. And then we've just got people that just, I mean, like me, I'm like, I just don't feel good if I eat a lot of grains. Like I do better if I replace all those grains with vegetables. So that's the backing it up, supporting the progesterone. Then you may need some extra support, like just leading up to your period. And it might be beyond melatonin and making sure that you have things that help you sleep through the night. Because when your progesterone goes low, you also get really irritable and cranky, and that's where PMS comes up, and you cannot deal. It's not that like there's something wrong with you in terms of like, this is, so society always likes to be like, oh, you can't put up with someone's BS. Something's wrong with you, because as a woman, you should just smile and be friendly and always courteous. And really what it is that you just don't have the patience. You don't have it in you anymore to put up with that BS. And then you add not sleeping on top of it, and you're not going to be a great person to be around in general. But I think also like if someone's trying to pull something on you, they're not going to get away with it. Like you're not going to be having that.
Well, on the notes of PMS and normal period, what are the most common issues that get in the way of women having a so-called quotations normal period?
Yeah, well, there are things, like, it's important to understand. I love that you're like, quote, normal. Normal is a spectrum, but there are things that are absolutely not normal. So the not sleeping, the crying all the time, your breasts so tender that you can't walk down the stairs or you have to hold them. This was totally me at like 14 in PE being like, I have to hold them. They hurt so bad. Not normal. Those are some big things. It's having anxiety, feeling depressed. Listen, like you might have, you know, a little bit of an existential crisis where you start reflecting on your life. It's kind of the gift of being a cyclical creature when your hormones are shifting. Yet you shouldn't feel like you can't get out of bed. You don't want to hang out with anyone. You're having panic attacks or you're so anxious that it's keeping you from being able to function. So PMS, premenstrual syndrome, this is all the symptoms that come right before your period, and they can be physical and they can be mental, emotional. And really the biggest thing is, does it affect your quality of life? Does it interrupt your activities of daily living? If it does, that's not normal and it shouldn't be accepted as normal. And I don't really care what the, you know, pharmaceutical commercial or anything in the media tells you, because right, the story is always like, it's inherently awful, but like, here's the fix. And we like to joke. I think it's fine, you know, when women, we like to joke about our PMS or our periods. What I don't think is fine is when men take that joke and run with it to use it against us.
It's your time of the month again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that, or like, a woman can't be president. She would blow up the whole planet. I'm like, yeah. Well, you guys have had a long run, and I don't know if you've noticed, but you ain't killing it. Like,
we're still a mess.
Women in charge, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing to the planet right now, because we tend to be caretakers. So none of those things are really normal that we've been told to accept as normal. And if we talk about the period itself, I was very much told, like, it's going to be horrifically painful. You're going to bleed all the time. It's going to be a mess. You know, my favorite is always, like, you're going to have odor and you stink. And, like, no. It's very rare. If you have odor, you have an infection. And outside of that, That's normal. Vaginas are supposed to smell, like, just, we're supposed to have like this odor.
They're not unscented.
No, they're not. And they don't smell like freaking peach blossoms or like creamsicles. Right. We've got companies who make a lot of money by shaming us and telling us that like our vaginas are supposed to smell a certain way, right? We've got companies that are like, women should smell like vanilla and berries and cream. Listen, I bought into that. I bathed myself in what are definitely endocrine disrupting, that means hormone disrupting chemicals, just so I could smell like champagne.
Every girl has bought Summer's Eve wash once in their life. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, yes. It's very disruptive to your microbiome that lives in your vagina. And in addition to that, because like it's disruptive, then you can have odor. Now you've got to use it more, right? It's very smart. Like, what a business. You know, the other thing is that our odor being like attached to like cleanliness, and cleanliness being attached to virginity, and virginity, for everybody to understand, is a societal construct that somebody just made up the other day. And there's no bearing. When T.I. came out and he's like, I take my daughter into the gynecologist for virginity checks. And I was like, wow, tell me you're an idiot without telling me you're an idiot. Like, that is like the dumbest thing I have ever heard. Well, I'm like, I feel like I'm being particularly cruel to him and like name calling right now. And yet I just get so triggered.
It was weird though.
It is weird, right? Like, what a creeper. I just think about all of the men who look up to him, and that sent such a negative message. And I really, like, I spend so much time educating that, like, the hymen is just this membrane, and it looks different for everyone. And it starts changing when you get potty trained, because it's no longer like, I mean, it's the guardian of your vagina so that feces and urine don't get in it. It's not the guardian of your vagina, you know, so that some man someday can validate whether or not you're a virgin. So it starts changing and shifting, and it shifts over a lifetime. And for some women, there is much more of a covering. And for other women, there's like nothing. There's nothing that's detectable. But in medicine, we can't like look at the hymen and be like, oh, you know, like it's there. You must be a virgin. Like, what if she's using a tampon? Like, and then the other thing, I was actually in a whole discussion on TikTok about this, because there's this great account called Her Perspective. I love it. I don't know if you guys have seen it. So good. But she said, you know, the whole concept of virginity is that it came from a man thinking that his penis was so great, it like changed everything for a woman. And I died laughing. And I was like, this is so true, because they, you know, there's this perspective that like the hymen breaks. No, it stretches. It's a membrane. It stretches. Just take a minute to like appreciate like how amazing the vagina is. I'm about to birth a human out of my vagina.
Congratulations, that's the plan. By the way.
Thank you. And, you know, someone was asking me about on a podcast about a menstrual cup. I started using menstrual cups at 17. I think they can be great. I'm like, I just explained it like the accordion. Like once the accordion gets stretched out, the accordion doesn't always go back to exactly how it was. But I'm not going to get sad about that. I'm going to be in awe of the fact that the accordion brought a human into this world. Like, it's amazing. Like, that tissue is so stretchy, so giving. It's just, it's amazing.
It's incredible.
Well, we touched a bit on some of the signs that your hormones may be off. So when would be the best time to get your hormones tested if you are getting some of those symptoms?
Oh, yes. So I have at drbrayton.com, I have a whole article on when to get your hormones tested. So oftentimes a woman will go to the doctor and their doctor will say, oh, well, we can't test your hormones because they fluctuate throughout the month. True. And we do know a time that they are more predictable. And if you were wanting to get pregnant, they would test your hormones. This is always the magic thing in medicine. This is just like, we're so archaic that like, if a woman is like, I don't want to get pregnant, she has symptoms, just give her birth control, ignore everything else. She says, I do want to get pregnant. Oh, well, we should look into this. Like, well, what if you never want to have a baby, but you don't want to be on a pharmaceutical and feel amazing in your body? Like, is there an option for you? That's part of my work. I want you to have that option. So day three of your period is the best day to test your estrogen, just to evaluate how is estrogen doing in the follicular phase. So the first day of your period is when you have a flow. So you would test day three, you know, you could do 2 to 4, but day three is the best. Following day three, we're going to go into ovulation. So that might happen day 14. It might happen day 10. Really depends on what's true for you. Estrogen will spike just before you ovulate. So it's going to go high then. And that's going to trigger LH from your brain, luteinizing hormone, to tell the ovary, release an egg. And after that egg is released, we want to count about 5 to 7 days later. And that's when we want to test your progesterone. And that's because that's approximately when progesterone is going to spike. So it's going to be mid-luteal phase, and then it's going to decline. So typically I like to test estrogen at that time as well, just so I can see how is estrogen and progesterone playing together. When it comes to testosterone, you can really test that. I'm like, if we're drawing your blood, let's just get it done then. It is going to be higher preceding ovulation, but we can still test it really anytime during the cycle. And those are the key sex hormones. When it comes to FSH and LH, these are brain hormones that can give us insight of how your brain is talking to your ovaries. We're typically going to test those day three. That way we can understand your brain should be signaling follicle stimulating hormone, FSH, to the egg to get ready. We like to look at that because sometimes if LH is really, really high, that might explain why we're seeing irregular ovulation and irregular periods as well. So those are the brain hormones that have to do with your cyclical hormones. And then, you know, when it comes to other hormones, we'll be testing cortisol. That can really take place any time of the month. I try to just do things when they're most convenient. Testing thyroid, we should all have our thyroid screened and looked at, given that women are 5 to 8 times more likely to develop thyroid disease.
How often?
I like to do an annual screening. Once a woman's getting into her mid-20s, I like to do an annual screening because it's just a quick check of when we're doing the rest of your blood work. Let's just check your thyroid stimulating hormone, your free T4, and your free T3.
And should a good gyno be able to do all of these tests for us?
They should, but they won't always. And I mean, in my experience, so I have hypothyroidism, specifically Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune condition. My gynecologist, it just in my experience, they are not trained and they do not understand it enough to manage it. And they really, it's disappointing because they really should in pregnancy. It's such a crucial time because I'm 40, because I had COVID, because I have Hashimoto's, I get a high risk OB as well. That I just check in like twice during the pregnancy. Way more in the know about thyroid hormone, but you're not going to see her unless like you're pregnant, right? So an endocrinologist might be a better route to go. But if they're, you know, an endocrinologist that trained like 20 years ago, they might be someone who's like, yeah, I'll just give you thyroid medication. And when you feel bad and you're not getting better, I just tell you this is the way it is. Like, and that's horrible in my opinion. It just really depends. Some gynecologists are completely resistant to ever testing hormones whatsoever. And, you know, unless you're trying to get pregnant, then they're sending you to reproductive endocrinologists who will test it. This is like, as I say all of this, I just want to take a moment and say, this is why medicine is so freaking frustrating, is that you're met with so much resistance. And medicine is also really behind the times. It's, you know, roughly 20 years behind the research in most cases. So really your best bet is meeting with a naturopathic physician or a functional medicine provider, because they are going to work this up and do the lab testing. For me, you know, when a patient asks for labs, I don't think they're medically indicated. I will tell them, like, I don't think they're medically indicated and this is why. However, I'm not gonna gatekeep the data on your body. Like, if you want this and you really wanna see it, like, just know I'm gonna put it in the chart notes. I don't feel like this is necessarily medically indicated yet. The patient is very adamant that they need this information. And that's, some cases, that's gonna give them less anxiety. I just think patients should be able to even just order their own labs, because you really, this gatekeeping of information, we see gatekeeping of you being able to get your labs, gatekeeping of you being able to get like any testing, gatekeeping of information for you to even know about your body. Like, I see people on social media being like, you shouldn't be talking about this, or like, you know, it's too nuanced. And it's like, yeah, it is like really nuanced. And there's like a lot to go into, but like, you can give people some information, because for too long, I mean, I see people say like, oh, science is too complicated. And like, because I educate a lot, people will say like, stop oversimplifying things. And I'm like, you have to oversimplify things, because there's people who've never taken a science class before. So we oversimplify it. And when they get that, then they build on it.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. All right, Jolene, we have one last question for you before we can let you go. We ask all of our guests this at the end of our episodes, and it is, what are three products that you just cannot live without?
Ooh. Right now, being pregnant, I've made my own belly oil. So I looked at all of like the top belly oils out there, and I was like, I can formulate this. I can make my own. I cannot live without that. Every night I have to like have that. Sparkling water.
What's your favorite?
I'm usually drinking Pellegrino. Okay, so that's two. And I'm like, what's the third thing? I'm like, there's so many food products. But there's also like just being pregnant right now that I'm like, there's my prenatal. Like, I can't live without, right?
There you go.
Perfect.
Well, we want to make sure that our listeners can definitely find you on social media, TikTok, Instagram, your website. Can you let us know all of your handles?
Yeah. So you can find me at drbrighten.com, drbrighten.com. That's my main hub. And then Instagram is at drjolenebrighten. Same with TikTok. And then you can find me on YouTube as well. And YouTube is where I've been sharing a lot more of my own pregnancy journey, which has been very interesting to be a doctor pregnant at 40 and the way that you have to navigate the medical system.
Amazing.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and joining us today and giving us your time. You've been absolutely amazing, and we hope to catch up soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. Take care.
All right, guys, you know what part of the episode it is. Question and answer, Q&A, call it what you want. Thanks for submitting your questions. And the two that we picked for this week are, number one, any clean beauty products in your routine that you recommend? So we've talked about clean beauty with a couple different guests in the show, and clean beauty meaning non-toxic, very few bad chemicals for your skin, super clean. So it is tough to have a beauty routine with all clean products, but one clean product in my routine that I love is Ilia, I-L-I-A, Super Skin Tint Serum. It's almost like a tinted moisturizer, but it's a serum. So nice, so dewy, and super clean. So that's definitely like a major staple in my routine. What about you?
I need to purchase some more clean products. I'm not very good at doing this, but I think my Drunk Elephant Marula Oil would probably be my choice. I think Drunk Elephant's clean, isn't it?
Very.
Okay, well, there you go. That's my choice then. And then the second question we got was, any COVID safety tips for flying right now? So I just caught a plane, and what I do that is super important, which surprisingly no one seems to do, is buy some betadine mouthwash. It's like an iodine solution that you gargle with, and it kills viruses, and it's meant to be amazing at stopping you getting sick. So whenever I fly or I go out anywhere, when I get home, I will gargle with betadine for 30 seconds and then use a betadine nose spray just to kill any potential virus particles that might have snuck their way up there.
So can you spell this betadine mouthwash? I don't know what this betadine is.
So it's spelled B-E-T-A-D-I-N-E. But you got to be really careful to get like the right one. You get the betadine mouthwash, the gargle one. So it's actually meant to go in your mouth, because if it's not the one that you're supposed to put in your mouth, you'll probably die. So just make sure you're getting the right thing and ask a pharmacist before you do anything. Yeah, it's not on me if you poison yourself, okay? But it does help kill COVID.
Read the directions. There we go. For me, I would say pick an airline that does not pack their planes full. So I will not fly American right now. Those flights are so packed, they don't block off the middle seat. Delta still blocks off the middle seat. So you know you're not sitting on top of someone when you're flying on Delta, which I think is so important.
Every airline should do that.
Yep, exactly. So that's going to be my COVID tip.
Perfect. And that is everything for this episode. If you're enjoying listening to us, please give us a little rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to click that subscribe button.
And you guys know where to find us. We are on Instagram at The Not So Simple Life Podcast. Give us a little follow. Message us if you have any questions. Thanks for being here. And we will see you guys next Tuesday.